My name is Maidstone Mulenga. I am honored, indeed privileged, to serve as the Director of Communications for the Upper New York Annual Conference. But today, I'm privileged to serve as your moderator for the afternoon session. We'll have three sessions this afternoon. The first one is something very dear to my heart. As you may guess by my wonderful accent, I was born in a wonderful place called Zambia, 10,000 miles away from here. But guess what? Even out there in Zambia, the United Methodist Church is my home. Which reminds me of a question I wanted to pose to you. Do you all remember what John Wesley said on June 11th, 1739, just 6 days after my birthday? On June 11th, 1739, John Wesley said those words that some of us can say word for word by heart. I look upon the world as my parish. Let's say that again. I look upon all the world as my parish. Indeed, that is the charge that has been given to the committee to study the worldwide nature of the United Methodist Church. And we have a wonderful panel to talk about this afternoon. Allow me to start with some regrets. The Reverend Dr. Ilunga Kandolo Kasolua, the Vice Dean of the School of Education at Katanga Methodist University and a key member of this committee, is unable to be with us even by Skype. But we still have some excellent panelists and members of the committee for the discussion. So allow me to introduce the panelists. The chair of the committee to study the worldwide nature of the United Methodist Church is Bishop Scott Jones, who is the Episcopal leader, the resident bishop of the Kansas area. Sitting next to him is my friend and colleague from Upper New York Annual Conference, the Reverend Dr. Kathy Stingo, who serves as the Mountain View District Superintendent and who is also a member of this committee to study the worldwide nature of the United Methodist Church. And next to him is my bro from my part of the world, the Reverend Forbes Matonga, who serves as a Director of Christian Care in Harare, Zimbabwe, and is the Vice Chair of the Committee to Study the Worldwide Nature of the United Methodist Church. So give a rousing applause to our panelists as they lead us into this discussion.
Thank you, Maidstone. It has been my privilege to be the chairperson of a wonderfully hardworking, diverse, and very interesting group of people. We held six meetings. We spent a lot of time listening that we will tell you about. And we have come away from this process with an even deeper commitment to the worldwide unity of our one church, and yet a deeper awareness of the issues that it takes to live more fully into that unity. Midway through our work, we adopted this vision statement, that we see a worldwide United Methodist Church driven to make disciples of Jesus Christ for the transformation of the world. To live more fully into this vision, we are working toward deeper connections throughout the church, greater local authority, and more equitable sharing of power and representation around the world. Our committee had 20 members and 12 consultants. You heard the three of us on the platform introduced, but there are others in the room who served as a member or consultant to our process. If you were part of our process in one of those two roles, would you please stand so that we might recognize you and thank you for the work that you did? Look around the room and you will see some others. There's Mona Lisa. Okay, very good. Thank them, please. When the constitutional amendments did not pass, we recognized that the church was giving us a message to go slow. And yet, the problems that led the last General Conference to approve these amendments by a two-thirds majority were still with us. And so our question was, how can we help the church move forward? It's not only a question of what were the issues that needed to be addressed, but how quickly were we going to move? And so we're bringing to you these four contributions. First, legislation about a covenant for a worldwide church. Secondly, a proposal that will lead to a global or general book of discipline. Thirdly, a single paragraph amendment about the work of general agencies. And then lastly, a request and invitation that this conversation about global models of our church needs to continue vigorously into the future. But first, we spent a great deal of time listening, and Kathy Stengel will describe both that process and what we learned. Kathy?
Good afternoon. It is good to be here with you, and I want to begin with just a little clip that would be a video clip, but Bishop Jones did the PowerPoint, so he told me I could say that. When we were in the Philippines, we sat around the table with the bishops and leaders of the United Methodist Church in the Philippines, and at one point, Bishop Juan turned to us and said, "Do you see us? Do you hear us? Do you know who we are?" And a part of our listening that didn't begin in the Philippines but began here in the United States was to hear the message of the desire for a global church, to hear that we were called upon to fulfill a mandate to discover that truly this church was created for the world to be a parish. We went to the United States. We went to because some people weren't from here. Some of the people, many of the people on our team are not from the United States. And we held meetings in the United States to listen to every group that was willing to come to us and share their views and their hopes for the future. Every group that wanted to come, every interest group, every caucus, every organization, every agency that wanted to come to speak to us, we listened to. We went to the Philippines, to Liberia, to Cote d'Ivoire, to the Congo, to Zimbabwe, Mozambique, and Europe. It was such an incredible listening experience. And part of what we heard everywhere was that there was a desire to have greater equality across the church. The people in the Philippines did not want to be known as the recipients of funds to central conferences. They wanted to be known as people who wanted to do everything in their power to hold their own and to be strong and to have a seat at the table, not as a charity, not as an outreach, but as full participants in the United Methodist Church. The church in the Philippines wanted us to know that their membership and their participation is tenuous, that their participation, because of the dynamics of us being largely a U.S.-centered church, put them on the fringes, and we need to be aware of what the dynamics are. Throughout the continent of Africa, we heard people talk about how the disciplines that they operated from were so outdated into the 70s and in languages that they didn't even speak. And so the influence of the discipline in countries around Africa was of little effect because, in fact, it wasn't available to them. Even scripture was not available to many of the groups that we spoke with, not in languages that they teach and work in. We heard negative comments on the politicization of elections, both of delegates and of bishops. We heard about the inequities of compensation between pastors and district superintendents and episcopacy. We heard a young clergywoman from the Philippines who risked, it felt like, everything to speak to the inequity of the financial life of what it means to be a clergywoman in the Philippines. We heard requests for more opportunities for interaction among the central conferences. We heard people say that they came to the United States more often than they went to their brothers and sisters that were in conferences right nearby. We heard people asking and thanking us for talking, but mostly for listening. We heard time after time that people were saying as they gathered in small groups in places where electricity came and went, where water came and went, where we had everything we could possibly want, the variety of places we were, we had people say, "We don't remember someone coming just to listen, just to hear what we have to say about the future of the United Methodist Church." We heard comments about the Book of Discipline, its irrelevance to the impoverished portions of the world, and the need for a more useful and contemporary book. Do you hear that? Relevance. We need a discipline that's relevant not just to you and I who serve in this country or whose skin color or workplace might be conducive to working in the United States, but across the globe. And certainly, as we've heard so far today, across all cultures and races. Issues with what are adaptable parts of the discipline and what are not adaptable parts of the discipline. What we heard and what I saw was a baby in an orphanage handed to Bishop Jones, who's not immune to those kinds of photo ops, and we asked them, "What is the baby's name?" The baby's name is Barack. And they held that baby as one of the few boys in the girls' orphanage where he would get the best care, and held in their arms hope for our listening. We walked into another church compound in Lubumbashi where they are becoming self-sufficient by building a conference center where they will fund their own conferences and retreats. And they were so incredibly proud to show us the story. We met people who changed our lives. But more than that, we met and we listened to people who said, "Do you hear us? Do you even see us? Do you see the color of our skin, the languages we speak? Do you know what we need? Do you know that we want to be a part of this church called United Methodist, and can you help us?"
Forbes Matonga will present our proposal for a covenant.
As we were listening, it was very clear that people we met want to remain United Methodists. And most of them said, "We don't want to leave the United Methodist. We want to be part of the United Methodist, but on condition that we are treated as equals." So because of that, when you talk of this covenant, it is emerging from that listening to say, we need something that binds us together as Methodists. Yes, we do have the Apostles' Creed. It binds us together. We recite it every time. But we want something that is uniquely United Methodists, that will bring us together as the people of God called United Methodists. And therefore, as a committee, one of the things that we are offering to the United Methodists is this covenant. A covenant for the United Methodist Church as a worldwide church proposed new paragraph after paragraph 124. United Methodists throughout the world are bound together in a connectional covenant in which we support and hold each other accountable for faithful discipleship and mission.
In covenant with each other, we affirm our unity and take courageous steps to live more fully in the calling means to be a mission of our church in mission to the world.
In covenant with each other, we will do our utmost best to understand, respect, and value the diversity of ethnicity, culture, and our denomination. And we commit ourselves to mutual love, respect, and trust. In covenant with each other, we see each other as partners in ministry, recognizing our gifts, experiences, and resources as of equal value to be a spiritual, financial, or missional. In covenant with each other, we commit ourselves to strive for full equality in our relationships, structures, and responsibilities for the denomination. In covenant with each other, we are prepared into a relationship of mutuality, creating a new sense of community, and an intentional practice of being a worldwide church in mission to the world. So this is what we will be offering, and we hope you will support us, and we think this is going to be a vital cement that will bring us together. Thank you.
One of those moments that crystallized the input we were getting was a pastor in the Philippines who held up a book of discipline and said, "I want to be a good United Methodist, but I can't follow everything in this book." My response was, we have the same problem in Kansas. Central conferences are given by the Constitution and by the Book of Discipline the right to adapt the discipline to their circumstances. Here's what you need to learn. Nobody knows what is adaptable and what isn't. Nobody. Are the social principles adaptable? Is the Constitution adaptable? What about the makeup of local church committees? Is that adaptable? Every time the Judicial Council has ruled on a central conference trying to adapt something, they have said no. Also, in the debate about the constitutional amendments between 2008 and 2010, one of the things we as a committee listened to very carefully was the degree of uncertainty that surrounded them. We're not sure what would come through the gate if we opened it. And so, one of the steps that we're proposing to take is clarifying what parts of the Book of Discipline are adaptable and what parts are truly binding on everyone around the world. And so we call it a general or global book of discipline, and simply are proposing a new paragraph outside the Constitution that lists the things that are not adaptable. Central conferences can then adapt everything else. And so this is a new section of the discipline that we're proposing, that parts 1 through 4 are truly global. Within part 5, well, these is listing the things that are in part 4, so that you'll be clear. Part 5, general administration, the part that takes up most of the Book of Discipline, there are sections that appear to us to be so important they bind all of us together. Local church and church membership standards. Local church organization, the basic structure of doing things by conference. Some of the paragraphs about ministry of the ordained. We've also specified certain paragraphs that are not global in those sections. Superintendency. Can you be a United Methodist and not have a bishop? No. That's essential to our polity and who we are. The general and central conferences. The annual conference and its basic makeup, but not all of the structures have to be the same. In other words, we think if the general conference will be really clear about this, it will help clarify the conversation as we go forward. And so I invite you to go to the website. You'll see this address at the end. For the specifics of this list, is this the right list? We're not sure. But we're giving it to you all, delegates, as a petition, trusting that the relevant legislative committee and then the plenary session will perfect the list, and maybe even over time some things will be removed or taken away. What we have in mind is that kind of thinner, relevant discipline that somebody in Angola, having translated into Portuguese, might use as a relevant guide to the United Methodist way of salvation. We think that's important. We had a long conversation about general agencies, and then in the middle of our work, the call to action got started. And so we realized that that was not going to be our expertise. And so Forbes is going to tell you about the one proposal we are making. Forbes?
I missed the morning discussion. I was going to be there. But I think from listening from the people on the ground, the view that we got is that people are not per se against the agencies, but they want agencies to be responsive to the needs of the whole church. And also to make sure that churches outside the United Methodist actually have what we can say ownership of the agencies. That's what we heard from the people. And therefore, our proposal is very simple. We are proposing to amend paragraph 701.3 and create a new 701.4. In that, we'll insert the following after capable of rapid response. What we are saying is that we are saying the agents, they contribute to the mission and the ministry of the United Methodist Church, both in the United States and in other parts of the world, through a collaborative, systematic, and holistic approach. They build up and empower ministry through sustainable programs and infrastructure which enable local and regional units to create ownership and responsibility. And we think if they fit to that, they become truly global instruments.
The last contribution we want to make is about timing. We had to figure out how to respond to the fact that the constitutional amendments were not approved. And so what we decided was that we were not going to submit constitutional amendments to this general conference. We thought that timing was not right. We thought that the church wanted to move in this direction, but there were too many questions, and we thought that some of these were going to answer it. The covenant speaks to our hearts and minds. The Global Book of Discipline speaks about what belongs to the General Conference and what central conferences might do. And yet we know that the deep inequalities and problems that we faced, if we're going to continue being a worldwide united church, have not gone away and still need to be addressed. And so we're hoping that the connectional table, or whatever body succeeds it, will lead the church in a conversation about how to move this forward. Friends, in our research and from the resource people we gathered, this conversation has been going on, well, really since the 1930s, especially strong through the Commission on the Structure of Methodism Overseas in the 60s. There were proposals floated in 1972 and others that came to into the 2000 General Conference and the 96 General Conference. This is not a new conversation. And so we're not going to solve it all in 2012 here in Tampa. But we think these steps are going to move it forward, and so we're putting forward a global model as a basis for more conversation. Now, please understand, this is not a petition. It's a request to the connectional table that the conversation continue under their guidance. And we hope our report that we'll all see in the Advanced Daily Christian Advocate will be taken seriously and be the basis for more conversation. Now, I know that most people don't pull out their ADCAs in July, August, and September after we've gone home. I hope this one is an exception. I hope your annual conference finds a way to continue talking about it. If you use the covenant at your annual conference session, I hope you will say to each other, how do we learn more and how do we actually make this happen? We think that the direction remains that there ought to be a central conference for all United Methodists, and that someday the United States would be a central conference. It would still have jurisdictions within it, and the jurisdictions would elect and assign bishops. But we think having every United Methodist belong to an annual conference and every annual conference belong to a central conference is the way forward that will build equality and keep our worldwide connection strong. We think that existing central conferences will remain the same. But they might want to create jurisdictions within their boundaries, because one of the problems we heard in Central Conferences is their episcopacy committees don't function well and the bishops don't itinerate so well. We think there's progress that needs to be made, and the General Conference needs to listen to those issues from our Central Conference brothers and sisters. The whole question of apportionments to Central Conferences needs to be addressed. Economics need to be addressed in setting bishop salaries in those places. We are inviting you all to be part of this conversation. We have a website. It's been up for 2 years. But we continue to put new information. Well, excuse me. At our last meeting, we put our report up there. So if you go to www.worldwideumc.org, click on reports at the bottom of that list, you can have an electronic version of our report to the General Conference. It's got a detailed list of what we heard. Kathy has given you the highlights. It's got the legislation we're submitting. We want this to be a conversation that goes forward. Let me repeat. It's a huge privilege to be a United Methodist Christian. And part of that privilege is to be in a close missional relationship with people from all over the world. Those of us who have traveled to those Central Conferences have been blessed by seeing vitality, and in some cases, understanding more deeply the issues they face. Our sisters and brothers in Europe are facing a secularization process that could instruct a lot of us in America about what's down the road and how we might adapt to it. There's a lot of learning and blessing that we can do for each other. We want to strengthen our worldwide nature, and we think these proposals will help move us one step forward in that process. Maidstone, that's our presentation. We would be happy to entertain any questions as long as time allows.
Thank you, Bishop. It's time for questions. Remember our format will be as we have done before. You state your name, your conference, and your connection to this gathering. And please, when I acknowledge you, you can go to any of the microphones. Do we have any questions?
Tracy Merrick, Western Pennsylvania, and also a member of the MFSA team, which has submitted legislation to the General Conference. I realize this is a time for questions, so I'm going to word my question in hopefully a way that doesn't seem like debate. As you know, in the document that was handed out earlier, there's an MFSA proposal that deals with a possible central conference in the United States. My question to you all is, and I know that some of you have spoken to this, and I understand that your sense, as you read the denomination, is the denomination was not ready. So my question is, do you sense any urgency to making these particular changes, or do you think this is going to be fairly open-ended before we're able to move to something like what we're proposing? And is there a difference in views regarding the answer to that question coming from the United States versus the Central Conferences?
Tracy, it's a leadership in the church, it seems to me, has at least two components. One of which is casting vision and direction, and the other is awareness of timing and how much progress can be made soon enough. I think the constitutional amendments introduced the question in a very realistic way to people, and they're aware that it's there. Our judgment as a committee, and frankly, there was a lot of vigorous debate because people want to move forward, and we do think there's some urgency. But we also had to listen to the debates around the constitutional amendments, count the votes, and try to figure out what is the church trying to say in this. There are lots of messages, and it's not as simple as some of you all think in terms of why they did not pass. And yet, we sense that the time is right for these steps. If the MFSA proposals for constitutional amendments pass the General Conference, God bless you all, go for it. Our judgment was the time wasn't right, and we need to get these first steps in place and move forward more slowly. An older bishop gave me this wise advice. It takes the General Conference about 3 sessions to absorb a really big idea. How many times have we done a ministry study?
I think this is the same sort of thing. And there are not enough people who remember the debates between 64 and 72. And so the fact that we started this in 96 with the Knockpeel Commission report, and we're now working our way toward this, yes, I'd like it to move faster, but hey, it is what it is.
Thank you. In red.
I think this question would be mostly for Bishop Jones.
Nam?
Margaret Novak, Yellowstone Conference. At our last general conference, we redid the way we function with the Standing Committee on Central Conference Matters. As part of your listening, Bishop Jones, you came to the meeting in Kinshasa of that Central Conference, the Standing Committee on Central Conference Matters. I'm wondering how you see the Standing Committee on Central Conference Matters in an expanded role now, functioning within the kinds of changes you're looking at down the pipe?
An excellent question, and I do remember the meal we ate together there and the conversations we had. I came away from that meeting. This was the first time the Standing Committee on Central Conference Matters held meetings during the quadrennium. Normally, it met only at the site of the General Conference. But because the issue of creating a new Episcopal area in a Central Conference was on the table, they held two meetings, and in order to listen, I attended both of them as an observer. I was deeply impressed with the work that group did in proposing a new Episcopal area in the Congo Central Conference. They reached what could have been a very divisive and difficult decision based on clear principles. And so it was a well-functioning committee of people doing their work well. I hope that it continues its progress to help us address some of those issues and to continue guiding the church toward that way. We did not propose any changes to that because we see that they're making a big contribution and that will just continue.
Cynthia Astle, I'm a United Methodist communicator with a project called United Methodist Insight. This is kind of a broad-based question, but let's see if we can get at it. Based on what we heard this morning regarding the call to action proposal and the restructuring of the general boards and agencies, how likely do you on the committee think it's going to be that the issue of global equality in the church is going to be on people's radar screens for the next 4 years? This is a conversation that you've already said that you didn't think the time was right to bring this forward as some kind of structural changes. And, I think many of us in the connection are wondering, how exactly do we create this kind of equality of relationship that we're talking about?
The first response that I would have would be that if it is not on the table, if this conversation about the global nature of the United Methodist Church does not remain on the table, then we as the United Methodist Church will have failed to be who we were called to be. The truth is that while we can look at reconfiguration and while we can look at changes made at General Conference, we cannot look at them through the same glasses before we look at the global nature of the United Methodist Church. We must have that in the lenses of our glasses. We must have the voices of the whole people of the United Methodist Church. Otherwise, we will fail. We will not continue as the United Methodist Church we hope to be. We will not be vital. We will not be as powerful in the Holy Spirit and in the bringing up of disciples if we do not recognize the vitality and the crucial participation of the global nature. We will lose part of our United Methodist Church.
Thank you.
Thank you for your answer.
Did I miss a hand feather at the back? I couldn't see. There wasn't? Okay. Gentleman over here.
Eddie Fox, delegate from Holston. And a couple of comments, but especially the covenant. Because as a worldwide or global church, the United Methodist, it's a reminder that we are part of the worldwide Methodist communion. Because the communion of the worldwide Methodist family is 138 countries. That's nearly 100 more countries than is the United Methodist Church. Somehow we need to recognize that, that we're part of that communion. The second thing is that in the covenant, I did not hear the words Christ Jesus mentioned in the covenant. I'm sure that, I don't know where it ought to go, but somehow we are a family in the unity under in Christ Jesus under the reign of God. Something, because this covenant will be beyond us, other people will see it. We need to be explicit about that.
I think we note that. Maybe we may need to consider that. I think it's a very important question that we are Christians first and foremost. Maybe we were more focusing on us as a family, as a denomination, and that informed the way we crafted it. So I think it's a valid point that you are noting, and I think we can consider that.
Thank you.
In my three general conferences, I rarely saw a petition that went through unamended.
That's right.
Y'all can fix it, Eddie.
We have time for one question. Can we squeeze into Tim? Okay. So that one and that one will be our two last questions.
Tom Lambrecht, Wisconsin, serving in Texas as a communicator. My question has to do with the provisions that define what is amendable and what is, or adaptable and what is not. What was your rationale for not including that as part of the Constitution and making it a little bit more protected from changes from one quadrennium to the next?
We think the process of approving constitutional changes is a difficult one. We achieve the same level because it's the General Conference that gets to determine this sort of thing. And we thought we'd achieved it without going through the difficult process of amending the Constitution. It was never strongly discussed. This was the proposal that came, and we just went with it.
Last question.
Jan Nelson, lay delegate from Oregon, Idaho. Tracy Merrick asked a question about structural changes and timing, and he wanted to hear if there was a difference between the U.S. perspective and the Central Conference perspective, and I'd really like to hear something from Reverend Matanga about the Central Conference's, or at least his perspective. I don't expect him to represent all the Central Conferences on the timing of those structural changes.
Thank you. I think as Kathy has said, yes, this is urgent because, for example, if we look at the Philippines, the more we delay, the more we will lose our presence in an Asian continent. So if we don't change the way we are structured today, the consequence is that by the time we try to do it, some members of the family called United Methodists would have left. Then I think the other problem that we have as United Methodists is having too many things at the same time. I thought the General Conference had given the worldwide nature to study, our committee to study the nature of the United Methodists and make an informed, researched proposal to the church. But before we even ended that, the call to action is there, and it's more radical. So we didn't know how to handle that. So I think it wastes a lot of money. It disempowers because you don't know who's going to present what. So I think if we really think this is important, it is time that we look at the structure. Because this thing, as Bishop John has said, it started in the 1930s. And over the years, we have lost members of the family anyway. So the consequence of that is that people outside will simply think that the UMC, in this case, the American part of it, is not willing to give up power. And the moment you read that, then without knowing, we will lose members. Not necessarily forming other Methodists. If you come to Zimbabwe today, there are a lot of churches that are coming, and our members are just going there. So I think we need to be to see this as important as is urgent. But our perspective was that let's give each other time, and we think by 2016 we would have really come to an understanding that, you know, this issue is first and foremost about power, and then other things will follow. That would be my response.
Thank you very much.